Here are some quotes on playing music. This is from one of my all-time favorite jazz guitarists named Jim Hall. It says, "The ability to play music, and especially improvise music, is the finest reward in and of itself. It is a way to practice what you are. Just knowing what the music is and how it works gives you inside rewards, a feeling of the balance of things, an appreciation of the hard work of others, and empathy. Music is a powerful way of influencing people, convincing them, getting a feeling or an attitude across to them, and immersing them in it for a while." And if you know anything about Jim Hall, he was a master of, you know, there's just something intimate about his playing. Like, you really feel like everyone in the room feels like you're right up close to the music, and it's touching everyone. I don't know how he does it. Continuing with the quote, You do have to sell people in a sense, and the details are up to you. Is what you're selling beneficial? Is it in their interest, yours, or both? Is it cheap? Is it an illusion, a deceit? Will it enrich them and you? If it won't do this last thing, at least in intent, then I hope you will find something else besides music to sell. We are already overcrowded with the other. The opportunity to perform in public and make money at it is a sort of bonus, a privilege. It can quickly disappear, often for no obvious reason, the same way it appeared. If you go into music only with an eye toward making it, you're missing the main point, and you'll probably not receive the inside personal rewards that are unique to this art form. Now a quote by Ali Akbar Khan. Our sages developed music from time immemorial for the mind to take shelter in that pure being which stands apart as one's true self. Real music is not for wealth, not for honors, or not even for the joys of the mind. It is a kind of yoga, a path for realization and salvation to purify your heart and mind. And finally, a quote from Pythagoras. The highest goal of music is to connect one's soul to its divine nature, not entertainment. So all three of these quotes have the same principle behind them, which is, it's a personal thing. Like, music is a personal, yes, there are outer rewards, but it's a personal thing on a spiritual level, on a learning level, and just general self-growth. So when you own the music, it's growth. It automatically induces growth. All right, moving on. It's growth-oriented because the philosophy of extreme ownership aligns with the process of mastering music. In other words, the book Extreme Ownership talks about accountability, preparation and discipline, and adaptability. So taking full responsibility for your preparation and performance is crucial. It's going above and beyond because you are there and you take pride in what you do and you take pride in yourself and you own what you're doing. Next is preparation and discipline. This is the second of the three philosophies behind extreme ownership. You know, I was given the sheet music for this Salsa Libre gig. I did three Salsa Libre gigs. The first one, I didn't know I was going to get the other two after that. It just goes to show you, you know, impressing others can sometimes go a long way. In the end, I did an enormous amount of preparation for this Salsa Libre gig, which was at Tioga Downs. And I had heard that band before, and I had come up to the pianist and complimented him on his montunos, which I loved. And he's a friend of mine. And then during the summer, he was in Peru or some South American country, I can't remember. And he couldn't do a few gigs, so I subbed for him. And I was, like, honored to be able to sub for that band. And, of course, you know, guitar in a Latin jazz ensemble, Latin music, salsa band. Guitar sounds different from piano, but the musicians liked it. I remember the singer saying, you know, he really liked it, and the band leader said he really liked it. So I felt really good, and I got a lot of rewards from doing that gig really well, besides just the gig itself and the other two gigs I got. But I'll go into that later. So preparation and discipline, like, even though I've got the sheet music, they sent me the sheet music, so why not just show up and read on the gig? Like, why do I have to prepare so much if I can just read? Well, because, you know, my reading is not 100%. Like, it's not, you know, the most amazing sight reading ever. And B, like, it's just a different level of ownership, exactly what we were saying, talking about. Third one is adaptability. If things go wrong, and you know that things always do go wrong, then you can be more flexible in how you handle things when you've already had a level of ownership of plan A. Like, you can pivot to plan B and C because you're so confident in plan A. Like, okay, maybe another musician misses a little transitionary section and goes right to the next section after that. Then, boom, you just know how to pivot. You're not, like, all confused, like, wait, you skipped four bars, and now I gotta find my spot in the music. Like, no, you just know where to go. That would be an example. Or it could be an outside thing, like, you know, the... I don't know, some guest falls or something. So let's suppose it's something extreme, like a guest falls off their chair and people go rushing. And of course you get distracted, you know, but you know where you are, you know the music so well. Or it could be an internal thing. Suppose what, like your amp starts cutting out, or your cord is faulty, or something. There's some technical glitch, you know, or your mic stand falls over, or your... Like, all these things happen. Like, they all have happened. So those are the three philosophical alignments: accountability, preparation and discipline, and then adaptability. And finally, we get to action steps. So here's what I recommend. You identify your piece. And let me just say a word about this. Like, this whole extreme ownership thing, like, we have a day job, and you are wondering, well, you know, where am I going to find the time for this kind of level of ownership? Well, I'm not necessarily saying that you need to spend more time practicing and less time doing the rest of what you do in your life. Playing music, guitar has its place in your life, and it's obviously important enough to you because you've been with the school so long. But I'm not suggesting that you need to drop everything else and just do guitar, although that might be nice. What I'm saying is, whatever you choose, own it completely by devoting time to it over time, like, and have it be a smaller thing. Like, if you can't do a lot of time, if you don't want to spend more time out of your life, then just own less, like, own one song, like, really well. And then you're at a party and somebody asks you to play guitar, or you do a concert, or you sit in on someone's gig, or you do an open mic, whatever it is. Or you even book a gig. Like, you have that one song. Like, have the thing be small and own it really well. In terms of preparing, you can organize your sheet music or tab, like, well. Isolate and identify your tricky spots and just practice those. Like, after you go through the whole thing, make a note or write in your music, circle the tricky bits. And when you're practicing, don't play the whole song. Just go right to the tricky bits. Like, I remember when I would play off-Broadway shows, and you'd go through the whole binder, and that in and of itself would take, you know, a few days or however long. And then I'd spend another few days only going over the hard bits. And then I'd go to the first rehearsal and make notes while I was there of any particular thing that I still didn't get right, and then go home and practice only those. And by the time the show came around, you know, I owned the music. So next one is you could also practice without the audio references. What this means is, like, if they give you the sheet music and the audio, you might play along with the audio and then also play it by yourself. Because remember, when you show up at the first rehearsal, you're not going to have the original audio playing. You're going to be playing to other musicians, and there's variation, and there'll be potentially different instrumentation. You'll be able to hear the instruments at different volumes. You may not be able to hear them ideally, you know, depending on how you set up. You know, suppose you show up for a Broadway show and you happen to sit next to the drummer, and the horns are way on the other side. You're not going to hear the horns that well. You're only going to hear drums. So it's not going to sound like what it sounds like on your stereo while you're at home. So you have to play without the music as well, so you can stand on your own two feet in any situation. And then we also talked about targeted practice. You focus on the hard bits first. and then you play and reflect. Like, you could play it for other people or friends or family, or play it for, here's another one I do, play it for a recording. You just record yourself and listen back the next day, or you even do a video of yourself, or even you put a video up on YouTube, you know, and that'll force you to really own the music. Like, you know, many times have I tried to do a home recording, and I have to do several takes of it before it's worth putting up for the public eye to see. And then it says expand your repertoire. Once you've mastered one piece, challenge yourself with another, so that over time, let's say it took you 3 months to own one song. Okay, fine. So then by the end of the year, you have four songs that you know really well, and that's pretty darn good. Like, now you can have a party piece, and then people are so blown away, they ask you to play another one, and you nail that one too. Okay, that was all a summary of the blog called Extreme Ownership from December 24, 2024. Now we're going to go into the other one called Own the Music.